Welcome to the continuation of our panel dialogue. This is Michael Toms of New Dimensions Radio, and our guests are Marianne Williamson, author of Return to Love, Raymond Moody, author of Life After Life and Reunions, and Neil Donald Walsh, author of Conversations with God. One of the statements that comes up in both books 1 and 2 is the statement, and I realize this is out of context, but it's a very strong statement, there is no evil. I'd like you to respond to that statement, there is no evil.
I can tell you my first comment is that Marianne and Raymond better agree with me or it will be very evil.
No, well, I can't agree with you, actually, but I think that it's a semantic difference. I think I know your philosophy well enough to know what is intended by that. I believe that there is clearly evil in the world. I think that there's that the torture and murder of innocent children is evil. But I also believe that I understand the context in which that statement is made.
Yes, Michael took the statement totally out of context.
Right, exactly.
And that's what makes it stand alone with such a stark
contrast. Right, and I think that we have to be real careful about that one, because I think that that is an area where this whole area of thinking that we are involved in can be deeply misunderstood and easily invalidated if we're not clear about the context in which we speak. The way I read Neil's books is the way I understand it from other metaphysical literature, which is that darkness, there is no entity called darkness. Darkness is merely the absence of light. And so it is that evil isn't an entity of itself, but merely the energy which is manifest in the absence of love or light.
As a matter of fact, book one in the CWG trilogy clearly says that the biggest evil would be to declare that there is no evil.
Just think of all the darkness and the evil result that can result. I think that one of the things that's very important for this kind of work, and where I think Raymond and Neil and myself and all of us who are involved in these kinds of work have to be very careful, is that, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. once said that what we need are people who have tough minds and tender hearts. And it is true that some of the toughest minds in America today lack heart. But I think it is also true that some of the most open-hearted people are fuzzy thinkers. And I think that we have to be alert to that. There are many people who would love to think that that evil is not real as an excuse for not participating fully and engaging fully in the world.
And cleaning up the evil. Yeah,
that's absolutely.
Yeah. I think the danger
is a very insightful comment.
I think one danger in talking about this question of whether there is evil and so on is that at a certain point you run the risk of legitimizing the demonizing process, and that's definitely a baneful influence on human affairs. I think it's so easy for people to project their own likes and dislikes out onto their enemies and call their enemies the embodiment of evil. We've seen that in the medieval witchcraft frenzy and even in the modern society that recurs again and again, too. So I think that God did right in these books to caution people about too ready a tendency to characterize someone else as evil.
Shakespeare said, "Nothing is evil, lest thinking make it so." That really is the whole point of both books, if we were to bring it down to very human terms. Our thoughts about what is evil and our decisions about that is what creates it and what defines it as evil. And I agree with you, Raymond, we need to be very careful, obviously far more careful than we've been as a human race in the past, in constructing those definitions.
I think that the issue here has to do with the personal demonization. For instance, I agree with Raymond. If you point at a person and say they're the devil, which is obviously common, you point at a person, say they're the problem. The real problem, the real devil, is the pointed finger. The real devil is our thinking, which would have us see guilt in another person. I understand that, and I totally agree with that. And I still would hold that we have to be real careful here, because there is another problem, which to me ultimately is just as dangerous. And that is when you have millions of people thinking it's okay and somehow using metaphysical principle to help justify the fact that they're simply not moved to action when 12-year-old boys are having their throats slit as a form of genocide in one country or another.
Every act in life is an act of self-definition. Experiences that we encounter give us an opportunity to be and to declare, to decide and to announce, to become and to fulfill who we really are. if we are people who can look in the face of the kinds of experiences, the kinds of horrible, horrible human encounters that you're talking about, Marianne, if who we are in the face of that is someone who would ignore it, walk away from it, or try to rationalize it with some New Age piece of fluff like there is no evil, then that's in fact who we are. I'm sorry to say I'd be disappointed if I'd made that statement about myself, and I am to some degree disappointed when I see other people making that kind of statement through their apathy and through their inaction. So I hear really what you're both saying, and as is always true in terribly complex matters like this, both of you, and for that matter my own comments, are all right. We're all correct on this.
Because truth is not a soundbite. People have to hang long enough for the total conversation.
Marianne, picking up on something you said, there are a lot of open hearts, but many of them are fuzzy thinkers. Could you describe what you mean by fuzzy thinking?
I've got some very definite opinions on that one.
Go for it.
As a logician and a professor of logic for many years, I heartily endorsed what God had to say in Book 2 about the difficulty in our education being these days that we try to teach our kids what to think, rather than how to think. And Thomas Jefferson said, in a republican nation whose citizens are to be led by reason and persuasion and not by force, the art of reasoning becomes of first importance. And that's something I worry a little bit about. First of all, I want to say that I am a media freak. I love television. I watch 2 or 3 hours of CNN every day. So I'm not putting the media down here. But I do feel a certain danger in what I see at the way that public discourse has shrunk, in effect, to the soundbite model of public discourse. There are many things, in fact, truths that just can't be formulated in a short sentence that's going to be gripping on the morning television shows. And I think that's something that we really need to be careful about because, to go back again to that statement of Thomas Jefferson, the founding fathers saw very clearly that being a fairly good thinker and reasoner is a necessary part of being a functional citizen of a democracy.
I think that what Raymond's talking about now is in my mind, almost the primary issue of our time, because I think the greatest darkness in America today is the deadening of the American mind. And I do believe that it starts with the public education system that has come to be more concerned with teaching people what to think rather than how to think. I personally believe that television, you know, Raymond, when you say you watch 3 hours of CNN, CNN is not typical of most television. And although I share with you a passion for C-SPAN, that's real different from most television fare, which I think has contributed to the Neil Postman in his book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, talks about
yes.
how the linear thought processes of a generation have been destroyed by what most television is. And I also think it's interesting to note that people like us, if I could use that phrase, this whole idea of whatever we are, that's what they like to label New Age as a way of marginalizing and peripheralizing us as far as I can see. Whatever this new consciousness work is that we are all involved in, it's interesting to me that there is so much projection onto it by those who would seek to invalidate it, that somehow it is less sophisticated thinking. So I think that for us to be quoting the Jeffersons of the world, and of course that's why he wanted universal education. He wanted universal education to save democracy. And in my mind, the people who most seek to undercut educational support are doing it for that very reason, because they know that it's true, because they know that you can't have control over masses of people when the masses of people are doing their own thinking.